overnight, and some isolated showers expected. Pōpō rain spreading, mostly cloudy Friday. So a little bit of this and a little bit of that coming up this week. High tides today, Tuesday, for the Waitemata Horiki Gulf, 9:15 this morning, and at 8:50 this morning, and at Unihunga at 5:00 PM. Shane Retty is joining us in a moment. Shane says that race has no place in surgical priorities, and the government should immediately drop ethnicity as one of the criteria surgeons have been told to use to rank patients. Shane writes, while there has been historical inequity that's disadvantaged Māori and Pacifica people, the idea that any government would deliberately rank ethnicities for priority for surgery is offensive, wrong, and should halt immediately. Shane Retty is with us to speak of that. Tēnā koe, Shane. Thanks for your time.
Tēnā koe, Dale. Good to speak with you.
You too as well. But you've admitted that there have been historical inequities, but even so, what to do of that? Our people have been disadvantaged. The data sort of shows that. And now ethnicity is going to be taken into account. Do you think it will see a huge prioritising of Māori awaiting surgery?
So not just the historical inequities, Dale, but current inequities as well. Absolutely. I've published on them. I've talked about them. There's no question there's inequities. But when you bring ethnicity into clinical decision-making, there is huge risk with that. Because the moment you do that, the moment you step away from what the clinical need is in front of you and introduce something like ethnicity, then tomorrow you'll introduce how deep is the person's pockets. I'm going to make a clinical decision deciding on the depth of their pocket. Oh, and then I'll make a clinical decision depending on what their contribution to society has been. And then I'll make a clinical decision depending on what their contribution to society might be. You just can't go down that path. You need to stay with what is the clinical need in front of me, regardless of these other things. How do I best address that need? And so it's really important for clinical decision making that health need be the first and major principle.
Wouldn't the problem of historical inequity be down to ethnicity anyway? And so what's changed? How come it was okay then but not now?
So the other parts that we're talking about, the equity adjuster in this discussion, the other parts to the equity adjuster pick up those inequities because it also takes into account low deprivation or high deprivation areas in the formula. It takes into account rurality as well, by the way. But they're picked up by other metrics for everyone who is in a low deprivation area, not just Māori and Pacifica. And so the formula itself already took into account the most vulnerable that we were needing to pick up, which clearly is Māori and Pacifica. That's already taken into account with the formula. But there is huge risk for everyone in introducing ethnicity as a top-line, first-level differentiator.
Tēnā koe. Well, how are we going to address the health inequity if we don't understand who is being prioritised in a system that has long favoured Pākehā New Zealand?
So to answer your question, how do we address health inequities? The way we do that is we need to improve cultural competence across the whole sector. We need to improve and continue, not just start, of course, it's already being done, but we need to continue and need to improve the cultural competency that we train at medical schools and that we teach at medical schools and nursing schools. We need to make sure that we have cultural competency as part of our annual certification with our respective colleges. We need to make sure that at an organisational level there is cultural competency. Cultural competency will beat inequities. It's a slow train, I understand that. So having made these fine statements here now, that's not something that's going to change tomorrow, but as a principle and as an action plan as to how we address inequities, cultural competency is the key to that.
You realise or you're aware that your comments will be taken by some in the Intel Māori as being anti-Māori. You're comfortable with that?
What they will also see is that when they're in front of me at my GP desk, they will see me focusing on their health need and their grandchildren and their neighbours and their friends and family and just focusing on what is the need in front of me here today. What is your clinical condition that I will bring every skill I've ever learned to look to redress? And they want me to be doing that first, not thinking about anything else. That's the clinical decision-making that they want from me.
Sometimes I'm not quite sure if I'm in your GP clinic or we're in your office at Parliament, though, Shane. What would you say to people who think, well, Nationals' lines on pro-Māori activity are skewered somewhat? I mean, they don't want Takawhai Order, for instance. Not real fans on gangs because, well, anti-gangs, many of them Māori, and now initiatives to improve Māori in the surgical waiting lists also getting the negatives from you as well. It seems more a political than a medical-driven stance.
No, it's really simple. Do they want to be safe in their homes? Do they want their property to be safe? And do they want health outcomes that addresses all those issues you've just mentioned? Because I'll be very focused on health outcomes, and as I've said to you before, show me one health outcome from the Māori Health Authority right here today. 3 years in evolution, 2 years in planning, coming up for its one-year anniversary. 385 full-time equivalents. Show me one outcome for management of what's just over $500 million. Kind of hard, isn't it? Because there isn't one. We will deliver them health outcomes, and we will do our very best to have them safe in their homes and their property safe as well.
Tēnā koe, 50 new doctors to be trained between Auckland and Otago universities. Is that enough? Seems we're losing more GPs than that each year, Shane.
Yeah, no. Remember, Otago and Auckland asked for 18 each, so 36 a year ago, and they were told no. This is a very small increment on that, and what we've heard from Resident Doctors Association and Association of Salaried Medical Specialists is that there may be at least double that, if not triple and more. So no, it's not enough. They're late to the scene. They were asked, lobbied quite extensively last year. Into last year's budget, they said no, and this is a small. I mean, we'll be grateful for all the docs that we can train, but this is not going to have a significant impact on the number of doctors that we need.
Thanks, Shane. Immunisations again. Both you and I were, appreciative of the efforts that many of our Māori health service providers, their efforts during COVID. I think that's been acknowledged across the board at their skill at connecting with Māori and Pacifica communities. We're still struggling with vaccination, measles, flu, and others. So the call's gone out to embrace these organisations more. How might that be achieved? What are your thoughts on it, and how soon does it need to be mobilised?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we had the Māori health workforce that helped us with COVID. They developed cold chains, they developed mobile vans. And I remember saying at the time, with the investment that's going into Māori health providers, I'd like to think that's future-proof. So we can also drop the National Immunisation Register on top of that infrastructure that's being built for COVID, and at a later date start doing the immunisations that you and I are talking about here. So really important that we support those Māori health providers. They do, in terms of telecoms, they do the last mile, if you like, which is where telecoms sort of always found hard to do in any number of ways, both fiscally and operationally. But darn it, during COVID, Māori health providers did the last mile. They got out there, they went to the homes. This is an area that mainstream struggles. This is what they're particularly good at. So how can we fund them, resource them, capacity build to help us with those immunisation rates? That's how we need to be thinking of Māori health providers and how we can work with them and collaborate to lift those immunisation rates.
Tēnā koe, Shane. What's on the cards for you this week, Kia Hoa?
So this week, it's another sitting week in the House. And then week after next, I've got Chris Luxon in the electorate. And so there'll be billboards and other things to sort of organise. We've got a really interesting select committee this week. And you may have seen it on television with a pharmacist from Christchurch that I've been working with. And we're looking at how we might safely reuse unexpired and unopened expensive medicines. Because let's say at the moment you're given $10,000 of a cancer drug for whatever reason. You can't use it. It's unopened. It's unexpired. But we put that in the incinerator. And heaven forbid some people flush it down the toilet and kill all the microbes at the wastewater plant. Whatever, we get rid of it. Well, if it's unexpired, unopened, and otherwise still complete, how can we reuse that and give it to someone else who might not be able to afford that sort of medicine? And, you know, we're not the first people to be thinking about this. It's been deployed through the states, and you know how litigious the states is. Places like Oklahoma have had a medicines reuse policy for many years. So working with this with Sunit, the pharmacist in Christchurch, and his petition comes to select committee how we can safely reuse unopened and unexpired expensive medicines.
Well, it's interesting, Kopa, but let's talk about that one too going forward. Thanks for your thoughts today, Shane. All the best until next time around. Kia ora, rawatu.
Kia ora, Dale. Go well.
And you, man. Thank you.